All right, so this is a song called Pearl Handled Pistol, and I haven't played this in a long time or really even thought about it, but my hands just tried to spit it out, so we'll see if I remember how it goes. That old one-trick pony sat down in the dust. He pawed the air. The gunshots died away. The sun was red as rust. It was red as rust. General G.A. Custer, he was a mighty handsome man. He loved dogs and children. He loved the military band, the military band, the military band. And the vaudeville tramps, church bell tollers, harlequins, holy rollers, they all lay their nickel down to raise the dead. With a tune low and wistful, a pearl handled pistol, and a mirror hung up above the bed, hung up above the bed. Now Buffalo Bill, he said goodbye to the boys. He said they're spilling blood and taking scalps and making a joyful noise. You make a joyful noise and make a joyful noise. He said, I'm off to fight the Indian. Take a little off the top. When I get home, we'll all dress up. Right around that old big top, around that old big top, around that old big top. And the vaudeville tramps, church bell tollers, harlequins and holy rollers lay their nickel down to raise the dead. With a tune low and wistful and a pearl handled pistol and a mirror hung up above the bed, hung up above the bed. Sitting Bull was sitting in his cabin all alone. The cops came along to fetch him out. They could not leave him alone, just to leave him alone, leave him alone. And that old one-trick pony sat down in the dust. He danced for the ghost of Sitting Bull, cause baby, the show must go on. The show must go on. The show must go on. The show must go on.
All right, welcome to Talking Music. My name is Adam Gall, and I have the great privilege and very happy to be sitting here in the Bamboo Room with Americana, blues, country, folk, very talented musician, Mr. Jeffrey Foucault. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me in, Adam.
Yeah. I wanted to ask a couple questions about Blood Brothers, which is your most recent album, last spring, I think it came out, correct? Full band, phenomenal album, phenomenal musicians on the band. What I was curious about was how much, with the talent that you had in the studio with you there, how much, I guess, directing, in quotes there, how much did you have to do to get the sound for the song to come out from those musicians? Or did you just let them go?
That's a great question. And every record is different. And when you talk to different people about what it means to produce an album, you're going to get a lot of different answers. So if I'm producing an album for other people, that means I'm probably going to talk to them about what kind of sounds they want to hear, and that's going to dictate how we engineer the record. Is everybody in one room together with the sounds bleeding through the microphones? Are they really, really feel strongly that their vocal needs to be something they can edit, in which case we're going to have to put them in isolation? There are all these decisions that you have to make before you go in, and that establishes a sort of grammar for the record, and it also establishes a set of limitations, and that's, by my way of thinking, that's about the most important thing you can do. So in this particular record, I had been trying to avoid repeating myself, and I was going to make a trio record with a songwriter and a good friend of mine people may have heard of named Kelly Joe Phelps, who's made a variety of records in the last 20-odd years.
Excellent.
So it's just going to be two steel guitars, two acoustic guitars, and drums. And we're going to put Billy Conway in isolation. We'll put him behind the glass so we could get a pristine drum sound. And then Kelly and I would just play like knee to knee, and we'd all be sort of, you know, within 3 or 4 feet of each other, separated by glass. And
tell me that's going to be your next album.
It sounds like a cool record.
Right? Yeah,
well, that's what this record was supposed to be. And then at the last moment, about 5 weeks before the session, when I already had the studio booked, Kelly had some stuff come up that made it impossible for him to be there. And I woke up one morning and I had sort of a bad feeling, and I texted him and I said, "Hey, man, I'm buying plane tickets today, so you tell me if you're for sure on this." And he had bail. So I was kind of thwarted in my intention for the record, and that happened over and over. Everything I tried to do making this record, I ran up against a brick wall and redirected on the fly. So my road band for the few years prior had been Billy on drums, my friend Jeremy Moses Curtis on the bass, and either Bo Ramsey on electric guitar or Eric Haywood on pedal steel and electric guitar. And so it was, you know, depending on which tour, if it was the Midwest, we might have Bo. If it was the West Coast, it might be Eric. So I decided to call. I had just done the prior record with Bo and Mose and Bill, and I decided, well, maybe we'll switch lead players. So I'm going to get Eric Haywood on the steel because we have a rapport. We've been working together for a long time, 10, 12 years. And then he couldn't do it. He was out on the road. He plays in the Pretenders, or he was playing in the Pretenders at the time, and they were on a world tour with I can't even remember if it was Blondie or it was something something crazy. And so I said, all right, well, I guess I'm just going to do what I didn't want to do, and I'm going to go back, and I'm going to call Bo, and we're going to, you know, go to the same studio and just try not to recreate the same aesthetic. And then about a week before we went into the studio, Chrissy Hynde lost her voice, and Eric Haywood was going to be not only not on the road with the Pretenders, but he was going to be finishing up some gigs with Tift Merritt in Minneapolis, half an hour from the studio, 45 minutes. And so now we had him back. And so to circle back to this idea of grammar, when you put two lead players, lead players tend to be, they're not alpha dogs necessarily, but they definitely, they tend to be leading things. And now you put two guys who have known each other for a long time but never played together, except maybe as overdubs on albums. You put them in the same room, and it's like watching two, you know, very nicely dressed gentlemen trying to go through a door at the same time, and they keep saying, "After you, no, after you, no, by all means, after you." So we spent the first day with them dancing around each other, trying not to play, right? Nobody wanted to take a lead line. So eventually, you know, I'm in the I'm the behind the glass on this one, and I'm singing to a fancy German microphone. I was like, all right, you guys, you know, first pass, you know, Bo's going to take the solo. Second pass, Eric's going to take the solo. And, I did that a little bit the first day. After that, they got it all sorted. But the result of that was when you listen to the album, there's no solos. What happens is everybody figured out, there's one thing that I would say is sort of an improvised piece of solo. And that's what Bo, he's a blues player, and so that's where he tends to come from. But the rest of the record, he's playing a part. Eric is playing a part. I'm playing a part. You rarely hear anybody take a ride, where the album previous had been more based in blues and rock and roll, mm-hmm. where there was, there's solos. That's kind of a thing that's going to happen, and Bo was great at it, and so was Eric. But this record, I put two guys together who had a lot of firepower between them, and they ended up making an album that sort of reminded me of some of the Cowboy Jack Clement produced Don Williams records from the 70s, where everybody's just playing one thing. It's real simple, and the sound is incredibly spare. And it takes a long time to, as a musician, learn to not play. And these guys both had it, and the rest of the band has it there. They look for opportunities not to play, and that's why I love working with them. So it's a lush record in the sense that we got real nice sounds, and we recorded to tape live in a room together. But it's a very spare record in terms of the way that we approach all the arrangements of the songs.
Yeah, well, it's like I say, the merging of it all is, I wouldn't say spare, because to me it's so rich, there's so much, but like you said, that's coming from the ability to know when to stop and when to play. So it's
Billy likes to tell a story about Marlon Brando being interviewed by somebody, and the guy said, I noticed that you have this very elderly Italian cook, and the last time I was here you had a different very elderly Italian cook, so why wouldn't you just get like a young Italian cook? And he said, because it takes a lifetime to learn how to do something simply. And that's a good thing to remember. If you're paying attention, it should get simpler as you go along. And I think that's true of a lot of the writers that I care about, poets, musicians. They tend to do their best work in their 50s and 60s by my lights, so there's still time.
Wait, do you mind playing something from Blood Brothers if you want?
Yeah, I'll play I'll just play the first track here. Do the dishes with the windows open. Soak the dirt from under your nails. Pour a double and put a record on the table. The light's always perfect just before it fails. Bow your head down when you break bread together. Close your eyes. Make a circle of hands. There is nothing that cannot be taken from you. In this life, we just hold on to the love that we have. Swing the axe in the hour before the daylight. Note the sparks that attend to the blade. A thing made free of itself leaps apart, and the heart divided would do just the same. Thank you. take the back roads with nobody on them. Find a river, make yourself clean. Go down to water if you would be delivered of sinner and sin, seen and unseen. Step outside, let the stars reel around you, cup your hand around a bright flame in that darkness. Let the heavens confound you, it's all just a story, even the sound of your name.
We're here with Mr. Jeffrey Foucault. That is such a beautiful song.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for playing that.
That grew out of a poem.
Yeah, and this is a perfect segue.
That
was the next question I wanted to ask about Dishes, which is that tune. So tell us about it, please.
I wrote a poem. A lot of times in the dead of winter, I will get up because the only time that I'll have with no, you know, chaos, I have a 10-year-old daughter and, you know, family, chickens, you know, dog to walk, people to talk to. I'll get up at maybe 5 and I'll build a fire in the stove and sit there and read and drink coffee, and I got a couple hours before anybody's up and about. And if I don't get around to splitting wood or making kindling the night before, and I live in New England up in the Berkshires, where we get a proper winter, not unlike yours, although maybe a little less snow.
Yeah.
At times, I'll go out and chop wood, and I was thinking about watching the, you know, when you chop wood in the dark, which is probably not a great idea, but it is a thing that happens occasionally. You can see the sparks that jump from the head of the axe, and especially when you're splitting something that's pretty straight grained. I mean, I live in the hardwood deciduous forest, so we burn things like
oak, maple, beech, and ash, and
maple and oak. And so when you're splitting, say, ash, you know, it's like you can split it into matchsticks practically. And watching the whole thing leap apart from itself, it seemed like such a nice idea about ambivalence. So so I had this poem that said, you know, out with an axe before the water boils, something about, you know, the head throws sparks, the heart divided would do the same. It was a very short poem, almost like a Stephen Crane style poem.
And this is something you wrote?
Yeah,
yourself?
Something I just wrote, you know, half the time I'm reading poetry in the morning, and then usually my brain gets all scrambled by coffee and I start writing poetry. Or maybe it's lyrics, maybe it's just a list of what I have to do that day. I don't draw firm lines too much about it until I see what I'm working with. And then that seemed like the basis of a song, and I was going in to do that Blood Brothers recording in south of Minneapolis in Cannon Falls, Minnesota, and I didn't want to trawl through all of my old notebooks, and I didn't want to just record a bunch of songs that I'd already written, and I certainly had enough for an album or two albums worth of songs that were just old songs that hadn't got around to being recorded. So I wanted to have it all feel like one thing, so I decided to try to write as many of the songs as possible before getting to the studio. So I had about 5 weeks, and I wrote, there's 10 songs that ended up on the record, and I think I wrote 6 or 7 of them in those 5 weeks, which, you know, what that means is hopefully there's some through line in the area of concern when you're writing, and that it may not be clear to you until you're done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I think what appeals to me about that song is it's very relatable. You know, all the verses that you talk about are all things, at least through my lens, you know.
You do a lot of dishes.
Do a lot of dishes.
We don't have a dishwasher.
Yeah.
We do, and it's me.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, watching the stars, splitting wood, you know, swimming in the river, all those things are very grounding and and wonderful things, and so it's easy to relate to. And I guess more specifically what I wanted to ask is, when you wrote it, and I guess you kind of touched on it already, but did you write it that way that would allow it to have the listener relate to it, or is it more personal? Like, these are your things that you're doing in each of those verses. Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
Yeah, I get it. I mean, the question seems to have, you know, at its center is the question of, like, intention. Was I writing for me, or was I writing for somebody else?
Yes, yes.
I don't think I could answer that question with any confidence. I wrote what I wrote, and I was thinking about my own experience, but if you write in an open way, you know, and you write something that feels true, it doesn't have to be literally true, you know, like the literal truth, the factual narrative truth of events is not usually that exciting, right? Like, I got up this morning, I had a cup of coffee, I got in the car, etc. But art, if it's successful, and this goes for poems, paintings, sculptures, songs, it's going to feel true and resonant for the majority of human beings, right? Like, people are going to, the big middle part of the bell curve of human perception is going to respond favorably to that thing. And that could be, you know, a Picasso painting where, you know, it's collapsed into two dimensions and the eyes are in the wrong place, but it still feels true for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. There's something about it that communicates truth, and that's why it's good, right? So,
yeah. Well, I'm glad you wrote it.
That's my sense. That's my sense. When I write something, you know, if it's good, it means other people are going to be able to, you know, find a pocket in there, find a door on it, and walk inside, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The next question I wanted to ask is kind of looking forward here. Are you working on any new material at this point, or do you have stuff, like you kind of referenced Kelly Jo Phelps and trying to put something together there?
Yeah, I keep leaning on Kelly to get it together and make a record. Kelly Jo is like a submarine. He surfaces occasionally, and then you hear from him. And sometimes you hear from him out of the blue, usually by text message. Last time I saw him was a couple years ago. We had lunch in the town where he was living, in Washington, taking care of his mom, who was very ill. And I'd heard that maybe he was going to move to Iowa, but I don't. He's a hard man to track down. But in terms of work, I'm always writing. So when it's time to finish stuff, that's when I start to be more thoughtful about what I'm trying to do, as opposed to just showing up and being the person who's sitting in the chair with a pen. So right. I had two nights in the early part of this week where I was down in southern Colorado near Sanford, mm-hmm. In the San Luis Valley, and I just found a simple hunting cabin that somebody had with a wood stove and a desk made of 2x6s. Mm-hmm. And I sat there, and what I ended up working on actually is some Billy Conway songs, which he's a fantastic songwriter and a great guitar player. And he writes songs that fall somewhere between like Zen poetry and John Prine. And he's a cool singer, and he's been writing songs for years and years. And he's co-written some of the songs that show up on my records with me. Usually that's something where he wrote the music and I wrote the lyric, but he writes his own lyrics, and I've been trying to corral him into making an album, and that may be the next thing we work on. I'm not positive, but I demoed out a song that he wrote and was just trying to figure out. Oftentimes, until you record something, and when I make a demo, I might just, you know, record it in my cell phone or whatever at this point. I used to keep a little Roland R09 digital recorder, and before that I had a Sony mini disc, and before that I had a little tape deck, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just blackboard stuff, because until you hear it back, you don't really get a hold of what's not working, like where's the logic issue here. When you say, when you bring a song to the studio, it becomes very clear very quickly. Your drummer would be like, there's two measures after you stop singing, why are those measures there? You'd be like, in your head you're thinking, that's the spot where I'm trying to remember what happens next. But when you're in the studio, you realize, well, geez, we could cut those right out and go right into the next verse, couldn't we?
Yeah.
So it's that sort of thing. So I think I might, as much as I am writing songs, and I'm going, you know, I'm going to have a couple nights to just work on stuff before I fly home on this trip. The stuff that's in my head right now is these tunes I was working on with Bill, so we may make that happen. It would be cool to have him have a little album they could sell on the road, and
yeah,
you know, I'll play, if you want, I can play you one of his tunes.
Yeah, please.
I think
do.
I know it.
Yeah, and again, we're here with Jeffrey Foucault on Talking Music.
Let's see if I can do this any justice at all. This is a. We don't have a working title, I don't think, but we'll call this one Beast. This is all Bill. I don't have a dog in the race on this one. This is a song by Billy Conway, a drummer of some note. And it's called Beast, I think. Like a beast most days, famine or feast, live like a beast. I don't know the rules, so I'll guess. Outside it's beautiful, inside a mess. Outside, inside, I try to tell the truth, not to hide. To tell the truth, so I lie outside. Babies crying everywhere, hear mama sing. It's all right, baby, hear mama sing. Outside, inside, I try to lose my. And not to hide, tell the truth, so I lie outside, inside. And I didn't write the last word. Didn't care. Go outside when the snow flies, feel the cold, cold air.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well done, Billy Conway.
Right? He's got so many good songs. And they're funny.
I think we're unfortunately about out of time, so if you didn't mind sending us out with one more tune.
Yeah.
Thank you again so much for being here.
Yeah, what a pleasure to get to come back and chat a little bit.
Yeah, Jeffrey Foucault, folks.
All right, I'm going to go back and do this song. I've been doing this on this tour. This is a song I wrote in my early 20s, which is turns out is a long time ago. It feels like a long time ago, and it is, in fact, a long time ago. Now, this is a song called California AA. There's like 15 songs on that first record. There's only a couple of them that I actually never think about anymore, and this is one of those. California, and I don't expect you'll be coming back this way real soon. Real soon.
It was in the spring a couple of years ago, and we fell in love, but I let you go so soon. So soon. And if I had the stars, I'd throw them on the ground. If I had the sun, I'd take and burn it down. 'Cause I just can't leave well enough alone. I just can't well enough alone. So I wrote this song to tell you that I am so sorry, and I hope that you understand how much I never meant to make you cry, how much I never meant to make you cry. And I guess you're gone to California, and I don't expect you'll be coming back this way real soon. Real soon. Real soon.
Good ender.
Heck yeah. That was sweet.